Well, that's the point of it. If they're a pro, you have to be a pro.
You have to.
You have to. You have to be the Kyrie Irving, the Luka Doncic of player development.
Right.
You have to understand, and you have to be the best at what you do.
All right, so part one with Newt was absolutely wonderful. We talked about his relationship with Sam Newton, his granddad, and how being the athletic director at the Mecca of college basketball and how his relationships there. But also we talked a little bit about being a white guy that owns a dominant a business in a dominantly black sport. We also talked about growing up, his dad, his relationship. Here in episode two, what we talk about are his dealings with pro athletes. So we got a guy here in Birmingham that trains a lot of pro and high level college athletes, but also coaches first and second graders. It's a crazy business model. We're also going to talk a little bit about the habits that's helped develop his business. We're also going to talk about all the different things as far as we're going to step into being a dad. We're going to step into being a single dad and owning his own business. So you're going to love episode two with Newt. All right. So let's talk through these pro athletes, okay?
Yeah.
So tell me, give me a snapshot before we start about your facility and like how you transitioned out of getting fired in college into what you do now, like the journey. I saw the journey.
Yeah, you got to live it a little bit. Like,
So tell me about the journey. Because here's the thing. There's a lot of people out there that freaking love basketball or love softball or love baseball or whatever.
Yeah.
And they have a desire to do what you do in their sport or in basketball.
Yeah.
Tell me about getting let go in college and how you took the step to do what you're doing now.
So we got fired in March of 2020. It's actually funny. We had 2020 on our new branding for our hoodie because that's when it started. And then COVID had hit.
Wonderful time to get fired from your job.
You feel me? You feel me?
Yeah.
And then COVID had hit. Mm-hmm. And this was what's crazy is because like you hear about a lot of bad things happening out of COVID.
Yeah.
But it's kind of cool to hoop story because everything we talk about is turning. It's not what happens, about what you do about it.
Right.
You're going to get punched. What happens when you get punched? Life's going to kick you in the teeth. It's about responding, not reacting. Well, I mean, it was amazing because kids didn't have anything to do.
They had nothing.
And I had zero desire to work with kids. And I mean like negative desire. Negative. But I noticed my son had played rec basketball the year before. And my son just, to everybody know, right now he's about 5'7", 5'8", 125 pounds, 130 pounds. He's 12 years old and he wears a size 12 and a half shoe.
Yeah.
That's not because of me. His mom's 6 feet tall.
That's right.
Awesome, solid. But when he went to play basketball, they made him stand under the rim and put his hands up on offense and defense. You were a coach. You tell me, is he going to get better doing that?
He's not.
I found out that like a lot of people were like that in the area, and COVID has shut everything down, so there were no camps. There was no nothing. Needed a place to work out. My guys that were at Samford that were chasing professional careers.
Okay.
And so I was like, all right, I promise you guys I have y'all for life. Scotty Shark obviously still do.
Yeah.
But we're going to keep working through the summer, and then – couple of kids is like, hey, what if we just like, you know, whatever. Let's hit some kids and let's get them in the gym. They're not doing anything right now. So we started.
Are these relationships you had through bubs, like your kids' friends and things like that?
These are people I never even knew. I cold emailed. I used our email list because I helped run camps at Samford.
Boom.
Used my connections and our email list there. Just said, hey, we're going to be doing some workouts at a gym. We started that gym. We ran that whole summer. We worked kindergartners, high school, third and fourth grade, sixth grade, our pros, then no college guys at the time. And then we started working with wheelchair kids because their parents had lifted it. It was a place called Forge Fitness.
Okay.
Their parents had worked out there and done CrossFit there. And they're like, hey, what are you doing back here?
Sure.
And my personality.
So you start out at Rich's gym.
Yes. Rich.
Rich Pitino.
Yep. That's where we started out at.
Props to Rich.
He, unbelievable.
Great dude.
Looked out for me. Was like, hey, he didn't kill me on rent over the summer and stuff. He's like, man, I get it. He made us have protocols in place, which was cool because from Rich, I got to understand the business side. And honestly, I made a mistake with Rich. I didn't want to keep pushing it. If I was smart, I would have kept pushing it and doing it there. But I was like, man, I'm gonna go try somewhere else. First mistake. And I had to fail.
Yeah, sure.
And then, you know, the fall comes around. Kids still aren't going to school. They're doing online school.
That's right.
We started working out kids at a place called Willowwood.
Okay.
It's right next to Woodlawn.
Yeah.
It is the size of a volleyball court with a stage. There's 1 foot runoff from baseline to the stage, 1 foot runoff from baseline to the wall, metal backboards, rims. Starting kids out there.
Wow.
We played in a fall league. I got asked to coach OTM teams.
I remember.
Never heard of OTM teams in my life.
Let me explain what OTM is here in Birmingham. Okay, so you have rec ball, which is like your city, Homewood, Trustful, Mountain Brook, city ball. All the kids play against each other. Then you have travel ball, AAU.
Mm-hmm.
OTM's in the middle.
In the middle. Smack dab in the
middle.
Okay,
you have to make a team.
Yep.
But the kids aren't just like next level elite.
Nope.
They're better players in that grade. And then they go and play the team's other fifth graders.
Yes.
In Homewood, in Vestavia, which those are suburbs of Birmingham for people outside of here. So you got rec, you got travel, AAU, serious, pay a lot of money, go all over the country. OTM's in the middle.
Correct. And essentially OTM, it's all stars from your rec program.
That's it. That's a great way to say it.
That's what it is. You have your rec program, then you have your all stars that compete against the rest of the people in the city.
Yep.
And, you know, I got asked to coach one of those teams and I had no idea what it was. I was like, man, we'll talk about it. It's actually a guy named Zach Paler.
Yeah.
And then he hit me like three more times and I was pursuing this thing with the New York Knicks.
What were you pursuing there?
Player development and scouting.
Yeah, okay.
But like they weren't going to send anybody up to New York and it was COVID. Everything was shut down. So nothing ever came to fruition.
Yeah.
With that. It was supposed to, but it didn't at the same time. And I was like, you know what? All right, man, cool. We'll do it. And they're like, well, what do you want us to pay you? And I was just like, pay me what?
Dollars.
To coach kids?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't care, man. I really don't care.
Yeah.
I horrible business model, right?
Horrible business.
And I did tell them, I was like, and the parents thought I was crazy. I was like, all right, if we're going to do this, we'll practice three times a week.
Yeah.
I don't care about the games. If we're actually going to genuinely do this, we're going to put the process over everything. And they were all telling me, I mean, their kids are in third grade and the other group's kids were in fifth grade at the time. They're like, you know, we're the B team. We got left behind. And I was like, y'all are in second, third grade. What are you talking about left behind?
Second.
And then it was at that moment that I was like, oh, no, a change needs to happen.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying a change. There's nothing wrong with OTM or how things are formed. Please don't misunderstand that.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about in a way that we perceive youth sports as coming from college athletics where it is a business.
Yep.
It is serious.
It is.
Wins and losses matter.
Lots of dollars.
Wins and losses matter. Youth sports should be about developing.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be about falling in love with the game, learning how to be a great human, because the truth is 99.9% of those kids – we're not going to play college basketball. And that's not even like a fake statistic.
You didn't make that up. That's legit.
That is legit. And once more, to the sport that we play and the level of athleticism and physical genetics that you have to have, looking across the board at the parents that we had, it's more like 99.99999% are not going to play college basketball. So we need to be teaching them how to be great people, because 100% of you will be a great person. The person that you are raised to be, you'll be a dad, you'll be a friend, you'll be a brother. 100% of you will be that.
Yeah.
So we need to use basketball to learn some work ethic. And so immediately with the teams, we talked about taking the results off the table.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that we're not competing to win.
You're going to get some pushback on that.
Because we're competing to win.
Yeah.
But we're not going to live and die by the scoreboard because we're playing a longer game.
Yeah.
That's where the infinity came into the Hoops logo. And the number one thing that we have.
Play the long. I did not know that.
Yeah, that's because we're playing the forever game. The whole thing is that if we have good, we call it the code because culture is the most overused term. If we have a good code that we live by, we'll be straight with this basketball thing.
Sure.
And the funniest thing happened. Them Joggers ended up smacking through a lot of people.
Really?
And winning a lot of games.
Wow.
And it drew attention from other teams who had been beating them in years past and doing stuff. And, you know, the more elite OTM programs, and we actually took and we're like, all right, this is cool, but this is just a bunch of white kids in this area. This isn't real basketball. So I asked a couple parents, like, hey, where can we go play real basketball?
Yeah.
And where can we, like, where can we play kids that they're not going to see every day? And we found a league and we hopped in it and we learned, okay, yes, we can really get better through here. We can transcend this. This doesn't just have to be to a specific area. We can play in other areas. So we started to do that. Not a lot of people were doing it at the time. We were looked at like we're crazy because you know my personality.
Yeah.
When it comes inside them four lines, I'm not the Newt that's we're competing to
yes,
win.
Absolutely.
And we're going in.
Yeah.
Okay. And to rub people the wrong way. And one of my best friends, Heath Hood, came from that.
Yeah.
Because that's just how it was.
Yeah.
So anyways, we started going to play in other places and they were asking, like, man, who are these guys? Like, what are they doing? And that's at the beginning, before this even happened, I was like, I want to do this long term. I want to own my own facility. That's where it is. It's not in the renting. It's in the ownership.
Yeah.
Let's go build it. Let's do it the right way. Let's set a code. And the original plan was to do it for all sports. Let's find a Newt that does baseball. Mm. Let's find a Newt that does.
And put it all under one roof.
Put it all under one compound.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we own the mountain.
Sure.
The hill up there.
How many acres do you own up there?
I think it's like 3.
Okay.
Sander, part of what we talk about, having people that are smarter than you and better than you, what you do. Sander's our CFO. He's my partner in it. And he does the real estate development.
Mm.
So I don't even mess with that.
Yeah.
I get to say we want
so
it to look like how we
want 3 acres up there.
Yep.
And you can, is there any vision or what's next from an architectural standpoint? From
always.
The building? Yeah. What is the next thing you think?
The next thing is we're going to build out the third court. That's going to be an NBA size court. So it can be 2 courts. We're going to make it to where we can do futsal and where we can do some more cheerleading and volleyball stuff. Mm. And then we're going to do batting cages.
You're going to go to the right.
Yep. So how you look at it as it stands when you walk in to the right,
yep.
You know, we have that beautiful view over the mountain. We're going to L it in.
Okay.
Blow out the wall on Caleb White's court to the right. Blow out that wall, L it in, and do just glass all around that side. So it's a state-of-the-art facility.
I gotcha.
Because we operate on cash flow only.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, which I like personally.
Sure, you have to.
Yeah, eat what you kill.
I mean, this is the way we operate.
It's eat what you kill.
So you were in, from the time you got let go at Samford, from the time you moved in to the facility you have now, you were in 14 different gyms.
14 different, facilities and facilities. Outdoor courts. Oh, we were working outside at churches and parking lots.
That is hustle.
Hustle, grinding.
That is hustle.
Ice water soup for dinner.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man.
And during that time, like, trying to figure out, it was the greatest time, though, ever, because I was learning who I am.
Yeah.
And, like, what I'm really about.
Well, but you also learned the people that really believed in you. Because you would be at MLK one day and would Woodlawn the next.
Yep.
And you'd just send out send out a message and say, hey, we're practicing here.
Right. Sometimes we had to cancel. Like, there was a shooting outside of one of the gyms, and I was there. And my rule was I always got there an hour and a half before any kid ever showed up. And the reason being, first, you want to make sure the place is safe.
Yep.
You want to make sure that the gym, everything's okay. You want to make sure the gym's unlocked.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is you want to make sure that, like, you're prepared and you have everything set up. The court could be messed up and you have to clean it.
Yeah.
But if you just show up at the time of your workout, which a lot of people that do use sports do, it messes with their processes and their system. So kids can't come in and just be themselves and get to work.
Mm.
They have to worry about other things. You don't want kids worrying about other things. Man, I used to take coffee and donuts to a dude outside of Willowwood. He had 3 pit bulls that got out of the cage a few times or got out of their yard a few times. I used to take him coffee and donuts just to make sure they were in the house before we had workouts and let them know we were having workouts.
Mm. Like, just so that one of your
kids... Just so the kids wouldn't...
One of your kids didn't eat.
And it was okay.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, shoot, that's part of it.
Small price to pay for safety.
You know what I mean? But it makes your drive go up tenfold. Like, I'll tell everybody thinks that the success stories are cool and they're, man, that sucked.
It's hard.
It was hard. There were so many nights, like, I even get emotional talking about it now. Yeah. Like, I cried myself to sleep out of fear for not being able to pay X, Y, or Z the next day and still trying to, every day you got to go up, you got to knuckle up and put on the face.
And got to smile and got to have high energy.
Yeah. And, I still... I get emotional still thinking about it because it made me who I am.
Sure.
It's making my son who he needs to be.
Yeah.
And because, like, you find out who's really with you.
Oh, yeah.
All my college coaching friends, ghosted.
Really?
Ghosted.
Why?
I couldn't help them. Hey, man, hit me if you ever need anything. Those guys,
yeah,
ghosted. Man. And I never hit any of them wanting anything.
Yeah.
I didn't. I just thought we're boys.
Yeah.
Ghosted.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But you find out your tribe and you find out who you're supposed to be with. And I mean, like, my right-hand man is Sander Hennessy. If you would have told me, and PJ Grooms, if you would have told me that my right-hand man would be a now 43-year-old country club golf swinging dude that was not in basketball.
You said, yeah.
And
no chance.
Or that it would have been a 26-year-old that we recruited that he'd never played for us, so we weren't tight.
Yeah.
I got to know PJ really, really well because he helped me. I didn't have anybody help me come take the wood pallets of the courts off and put them together.
Mm.
And we have NBA modular courts. Like, yeah, we have the nicest courts you
beautiful
can get.
Beautiful courts, yeah.
But those just shipped in on a pallet, and we put them all in place and together. And he just came because I hit a photographer that I knew. It was like, hey, I need a few people. Y'all trying to make some money? I'll pay you guys to help me put these courts together. PJ and CJ Jones walked in the gym. I was like, what?
Yeah.
You remember me?
Yeah.
And we got cool like that. And now PJ is my right hand.
Yeah. And one of your best, I say assets, he is an asset.
Shoot. Your people are your biggest assets.
He is an asset. He is an asset. The kids love Coach PJ.
Yep.
Tegan.
Yep.
Loved him. I mean, because when you walk in the door, everyone wants the owner.
Yeah.
But the owner can only be so many places. And there are probably some things that PJ does better than you.
Not probably.
Yeah.
Not probably.
It's like Jonathan, our chef.
Yeah.
At some point, you got to hire people that are better than you are. And yeah, Jonathan's so much better than I am as far as cooking is concerned. And there are some aspects that PJ is just better.
Not probably.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I think that's what people are scared to admit. And I've been scared. I failed with PJ some, and I failed, yeah, with our people. And I'm sure you can speak to
all
how many time. How many people have you had in that weren't a part of? And now it's different with what we do because ours is like in your face. We're coaching. We're teaching.
Yeah.
That weren't a part of the culture and the mission that you had to.
Oh, there's been people we've had to. We haven't had to let go a lot of people. We've had to let Sarah and I've had to let go some.
Yeah,
but like most of the time, people eliminate themselves.
Yeah. That's the same thing. That's real.
Getting rid of people,
yeah,
firing people, and people letting go of them, getting rid of themselves.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's all the same.
Yeah.
Now, do I force them to quit? No.
No.
But they realize that we don't fit, whether it be a personality thing with mm-hmm. me, whether it be a personality thing, oh, the building.
Yep.
The demands.
Yep. Because there is a standard.
Some people don't get along with me.
Yeah.
Some people don't get along with the job.
And because that's fine,
it's
right?
Fine. It is fine.
People look at it like it's such a negative. Look, we're not made for each other.
We are.
We're not made to work together. Cool. Rock out. Okay. Do your thing. But just not do it over there.
Do it over there. That's right.
I want you to eat, just not just with me.
Just not with me.
Okay?
But
like we have PJ, and the hardest thing that we've had straight up, and this is where we're getting better with it, we have had so many people involved and that end up hurting us more than helping us. And like finding the right ones has been such a process, but not just PJ.
Right.
PJ now has his people that he's grooming and building into being something special. And that's so dope. Cause we have a guy named Sam, Jeff Coat. He coaches our OTM teams. He's taken over the Mambas program.
Okay.
Okay. Awesome. And he adds the baseball aspect of it. Yep, and he's a Mountain Brook kid.
Yeah.
And Mountain Brook is, just so everybody understands, it's closest to us. We're not, yeah, specifically Mountain Brook, period. But it's just,
you're in Mountain Brook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's also a guy that understands the area, a white guy that, yeah, understands the area. PJ's from Birmingham, a young black man who understands, yep, the area. And now we've hired a guy named Sed. And Sed is our athletic and strength development coach. We built out a weight room in
What's
the front
his name?
Room. Sed Brazil.
Okay.
Okay. And he was with the squadron.
Oh, okay.
And with the Pels organization. And just through our work with the guys, gotten to know him. And I was like, man, we have to have him.
Yeah.
because he does basketball and he does, he's a black guy from Huntsville. So when you talk about expanding this thing and spreading it, what's the best road in Alabama to go up and down?
65. Yeah.
So we're going to live off of 65.
Wow.
We're going to do up in Florence, Huntsville area, and then we're going to take it on down to the Gump.
Right.
And that's how we're going to build our own circuit so that we can run tournaments correctly as well. But saying all that to say is now we have the strength and athlete development side that's really dope because little white guys need to get some agility training.
They do.
They do. And he teaches that. Mm. We need to understand how to use our bodies and move with our bodies. So we, the front room was initially going to be a golf simulator, a lounge, but we were like, no, forget that. We're turning this into a weight room.
Good.
And that's how our pros benefit off of it too.
So we talk about pros. We talk about the kids. What is your opinion about sports specialization in the younger ages, like K through eight?
I don't believe in it.
So here's the question.
Maybe sixth, seventh, eighth, I do.
Okay.
Kindergarten through fifth grade.
So let's talk about that. So sixth, seventh, eighth. Do you believe that sixth, seventh, and eighth graders have to pick one?
No, I don't think they have to pick one. I don't think they have to.
Yeah.
By any means, the word, I think as you get older, you need to start like dialing in on what your passion is. I don't think you have to. I don't think you need to. I'm not going to make Bub pick. He's in sixth grade. He wants to play football. Rock out, play football. Yeah.
Do you think that parents are going down their own direction where they get their kids to play one thing all year round?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, everything refers back to relationships, right? Sure. I mean, that's just kind of life. Asking a kid to pick one sport before he's able to make educated decisions on, like, where he wants to live when he's older and what he wants to be is absolutely insane. Would you marry somebody just because that's your only option?
No, absolutely not.
Right? I mean, like, that's a horrible reason to do something. You need to
try. Never heard it asked that
way. You need to date
before
you marry.
Sure.
You got to try other things. Yeah. And, man, you never know what your kid can do. My kid's cold at art.
Yeah.
I suck at being artistic.
Well, and he's going to be big, but will he be 6'9"? Maybe
no,
not.
I don't think so. I love him. He's projected like 6'10". He going to get to like 6'5", to 6'7", 6'8".
And depending on his skill level, because a 6'5", a 5, if that he plays it. 5, that ain't it.
No.
But a 6'5 tight end?
Yeah. And then also a 6'5", 3 man.
Oh, yeah.
That can shoot, which you know my son.
Yeah.
Everybody's seen my son. My son didn't start playing basketball until he was like 8 years old.
Sure.
Because I wasn't going to push him.
Yeah.
And he had to travel with me all the time as a dad. He had to hit the road with me and go recruiting.
That's crazy.
He had to, when I was a video coordinator, he had to sit up in the catwalk with me when he was a baby, an infant baby. And while I was filming games and cutting games live, like, that's what he was doing. So I wasn't going to push him into it. And the crazy thing is we have done strictly focus on skill and then competing when it's time to compete. And we've built in ways to lose and to fail so that he understands how to lose.
Yeah.
And that it's not understanding how to lose like, hey, keep your chin up.
No.
Hey, lose with your head high. Don't No, let that thing hurt.
Yeah, it's got to hurt.
But let it piss you off so that you go work hard.
It's got to be motivating.
You know, that's how we teach people to lose, not by like, hey, buddy.
Yeah.
No, it's like, hey, yeah, man. Tell me what happened.
How can we fix what we did wrong?
So you asked a question. You didn't tell him.
Yeah.
You asked a question.
Yeah.
The question gets the mind thinking, and then it gets him processing things to where he understands that failure can be fixed.
How have parents changed in the last 10 years when it comes to raising athletes?
Changed? I think the only thing that's changed is how visible it is.
Okay.
I think that's the only thing that's changed. I think that athletics is so, everything's so in your face. And I watch videos on Instagram of dads talking smack to each other at an AAU event and then going and playing pickup. Or you'll hear about shootings at events and parents fighting refs. Mm. I think that everybody is so concerned what everybody else thinks that they're not being men and not being leaders, and they're being emotional and being weak on it. And they're like, well, no, I'm going to handle it myself. No.
Yeah.
Let your kid fail.
Sure.
Hey, they're saying this about your kid. Well, let him fight it.
Yeah.
But I think what's changed is how visible little Johnny winning. Oh, he scored 8 touchdowns and we beat the Dolphins this weekend. And you're like, yeah, but you're playing, like, that's like saying you're the tallest midget in the world.
Yeah.
I get you playing rec.
Yeah.
This, he is 10 years old.
Yeah.
Who cares?
No, no
way. What type of person is he?
Sure.
How is he? Does he work hard?
Yeah. That's the key.
Is he one of those kids that just developed earlier than everybody else? Because nobody wants to talk about those kids. The kids that develop earlier than everybody else, so nobody actually holds them accountable and works on their skill set,
right,
so they can see with it when they get older. And then they're 6 feet tall, 12th grade, and they're out partying every night, mm-hmm, because they're so burnt out on sports, and nobody's telling them how great they are anymore because they're not great anymore, and they have to do, like, real-life stuff.
That's a hard road.
And mom and dad, they ain't posting about me now. Mm-hmm. They're not. They don't worship me now. I mean, that's...
That's hard.
You imagine that?
Oh, well, you saw kids that were dominant at sports in, you know, kindergarten through the fourth or fifth or sixth grade, and then they stopped growing. It's like me. I didn't start growing. I didn't get any size at all until like 10th, but close to 11th grade. I got a topic that we've both done. Tell me about, I call it redshirting. Tell me about redshirting our kids in grade school, meaning having them repeat a grade.
Honestly, I'm not a fan of it until they're older and you see it. My son started school early,
mm-hmm,
so my son's younger than most of the kids in his current sixth grade class.
Yep.
But he would have been in seventh grade if we kept him in the right grade.
Yeah.
We moved to Mountain Brook from Homewood, uh-huh, and decided that was an appropriate time to hold him back because Mountain Brook goes up to sixth grade. For sport-specific reasons, I think it's the stupidest thing in the world.
Okay.
Because when you go to high school, you're a freshman. If you're really a good athlete, you're competing against 12th graders,
sure,
11th graders. You're always looking at the year above or year below you.
Yeah.
Same thing with college. You're looking at the year above and the year below, potentially 2 years above. So I don't think it really matters. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge fan of it. I understand it if it's an emotional, if it's a social deal. I understand it more if you're like, my kid's and the kids that he's with, it's not a good social or emotional, sure, situation. But if it's purely for sports, I think you're just delaying the inevitable.
Yeah.
And our job as parents and as leaders is to prepare kids for the road ahead, mm-hmm, not change the road for the kids.
The thing about redshirting your kids, though, from a developmental standpoint, that I think is positive, is you get another year with them.
Facts. That's real.
The development of a brain between 18 and 19 is pretty dramatic.
Huge.
And the physical development,
yep,
along with the social development. Think about this. Think about how you handled things the start of your senior year of high school.
Dude, I got sent to military school because of how I handled things.
And then think about how you handled things your freshman year of college.
Polarizing.
Pretty different.
Polarizing.
So from that aspect, I am a huge fan of it. Now,
yep,
let me say this, being super transparent. The athletic piece was a factor. But on a scale of 1 to 10, it was probably 1 or 2.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm talking about purely for athletic reasons.
Yeah.
No.
No.
But my son is a red shirt.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it.
How old is he now?
He's 12.
When does he turn 13?
August 24th next year.
Okay. So he's the age he should be.
He's the age he should be. That's why I was like, you know what?
You started him too early.
This is cool.
You started too early because you were a single dad.
Man, I was paying $1,500 a month. It ended up being $18 by the end of it. I was paying $1,800 a month. I got a promotion without getting promoted.
Yes, you did.
And he was smart. Bub's smart.
Yeah.
But like, dude.
But that's what a lot of people do.
I was broker than broke.
I know. With it, from a financial standpoint, they put their kids in early.
Yeah.
Then they get a raise.
Yes. 1,000%.
Yeah. That's what Jackie started college at 17. Did not turn 18 until October 1st for freshman year of college.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
But I feel them.
They were broke.
You feel me?
They were broke.
If you were broke,
yes,
you are
built-in daycare.
You do what you were allowed to do within your lifetime.
Absolutely.
I was broke as hell.
Yeah. Yep.
And my son's mom, and she made the point at the time, and I told her, I was like, yeah, this is because I'm broke and he's smart.
Yeah.
And I'm responsible for 100% of his stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. If he's smart and they're pushing him to do it, I holla.
Yeah.
See ya.
If I want to hold him later, and you did.
We did.
And it's great.
And I
and he's told in her, the grade he's supposed to be in, if we and he's doing great.
And it just works out. Yep. But it does. There's a lot of sacrifice built in there, man.
Sure.
There is.
Tell me about coaching these pro athletes.
Yeah.
So you will go in a day, and I want to talk about the day-to-day in a second. You'll go in a day from being with a fourth grader.
Yeah.
To coaching a guy that's making $1 million.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about coaching these pro athletes and what that done. How'd you get into that?
So that really came from my time at Sanford.
Yeah.
And truthfully, remember Kevin Murphy, Tennessee Tech?
Yeah.
I actually worked Murph out while I was a player.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So I've started, the player development side of that has always been there for me. It's always been a love of mine. There's a guy, Nimbo Hammonds, where I'm from. Unbelievable with it. But I've always loved working with high-level athletes and the relationship piece there because a few things. One, I'm valid in what I do.
Uh-huh.
What we do is not gimmicky.
Well. Yep.
We do what we do at a higher level than anybody else. We do it with energy, and we don't make them feel like they're there for clout, whatever, because none of that stuff matters at the end of the day. The other thing that helps is I can hoop.
Yeah.
I can't just show you or tell you what to do. I can do it.
Yeah.
And we do it together, and I'll demonstrate, and we'll hop out there. I'm going to guard you. So the big thing with pros is they can. If you're just standing there, it's like football blocking air. That ain't how it works. You got to go against some live action reps and understanding the season of life that these guys are in.
Okay, yeah.
They just came off of a long season and a huge stretch with the season. You got to understand when they're in season, you only work on touch, only on shooting, only on touch-up floats. And a lot of what we do is help their mental. Some guys are dealing with different stuff that they can't talk to their organizations about just because they don't, you know, you're an employee. When you play for the New Orleans Pelicans, you are an employee.
Yeah.
So you're either an asset or a liability. If you have stuff going on off the court, you're a liability.
Yeah.
Wow. So we help with that. But the truth is the nuts and bolts, when you talk about training and doing player development for them, you have to create an environment that they want to be in.
Okay.
You have to make them feel ownership without giving them entitlement.
Yeah.
They want to be empowered. They want to feel a part of something bigger than themselves. And then you have to have the relationship. They don't care how much you know until they know how much you care about them.
Sure.
And you've got to be genuinely invested in them as a person before you can do any work with them. I don't work with every pro. There's people that hit me that I'm like, nah. There's people that I'll work out once and I'll be like, hey, this ain't really a good fit because we don't really do Hollywood stuff. Hmm. We grind.
Yeah.
We work.
Work hard.
I'm going to push you.
Yeah.
PJ is going to push you. Our staff's going to push you. But it's going to come from a place of love.
Okay, so when I was at NC State, this brings back a good point, though, too. And I'll say this. When I was at NC State, Mike Berry was our offensive line coach. Mike Berry went to go coach the Detroit Lions.
Yep.
He was there a year. And I called him, and I asked him, I said, hey, what's the biggest difference in coaching a college kid and coaching a pro kid?
What did he say?
He said, the pro guys walk in the room, and if you can help them make more money,
yep,
they will listen. If you can't, there's very little respect given. They can tell very quickly,
yep,
if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But if you can help them with one or two little things, they will listen and hang on every word.
Well, that's the point of it. If they're a pro, you have to be a pro.
You have to.
You have to. You have to be the Kyrie Irving, the Luka Doncic of player development.
Right.
You have to understand, and you have to be the best at what you do.
Are you getting referrals from other pro guys that come to you?
Yes, that happens. A lot of times it's super organic because the pros are like my little brothers.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just look at them like your brothers. But, yeah, I mean – dang near every Pelicans guy is going to cut. Like, obviously, not the Zions, the BIs, because, I mean, they can go wherever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it works like that. It's more organic.
Sure.
More people see and like what we do, and they see the success and the results that other guys have had. Mm. And they'll be like,
what are you doing?
Oh,
what'd you do this summer?
Okay, he's over there. Nah, and some guys will be like, nah, you got to holler at the guys over at Hoops for that.
Yeah.
we're really good on like shot development and helping guys with in-game shots. We're really good on understanding the game flow. We break it down in two different segments for them. Mm-hmm. We have what we call bag work, which is your one-on-one game.
Yeah.
Then we have your game simulations, which is where, you know, a lot of guys like to just do bag work, but you ain't, the max you're dribbling the ball is 4 or 5 times, unless you're the dude.
Yeah.
And only 2 guys on each team are the dude.
Wow.
So what we do a lot is game simulation and game application, and it'll be like working on pushing 2 dribbles, hitting with a sharp pass, relocating, getting to your spot, working on game simulated stuff.
Yeah.
We do those with 2 or 4 guys at a time so that they can work on their full game, because a lot of times, like, you don't mimic real game reps when you work out, and these guys, they're not practicing to practice, they're practicing to play. Right. And you have to have game simulated reps in there.
Tell me about the day-to-day with these pro and college guys.
Just with the pro and college or all the way
just
through?
Pro and college.
So day-to-day with pro and college, we have said we'll send them a time. During the summers, it's way deeper, way huge group. We call it the Infinity Club. We'll split those in between guards and forwards.
Okay.
On Mondays, we'll do station work to where PJ has a basket, Christian Watford has a basket, I have a basket, and we all have different things we're working on. PJ most of the time works on bad
work. Like the fourth graders.
Yep.
I love it.
It's the truth.
No, I get it.
But they like it because of the switch up. So you have it, PJ, let's say he's doing bag work, one-on-one moves, and now it's skill specific, is tailored to how you need to do things and all the film that we've watched on you through Synergy. See what might have shooting, and I'll probably have game application, game simulation. We rotate that every week between the three of us so we can stay sharp on our stuff.
So you'll do one every – okay.
Yep, and then on Wednesday – so Tuesdays they'll play, pick up, nothing but pick up. Thursday we'll get back into it and we'll get to where we go more skill specific.
Okay.
And we spend an hour just honing skills.
Just shooting.
So that's different. That's where I'm going to mess you up.
Okay.
But it's just like skill, like, hey – in this type of situation, in this game, we're working on side pick and rolls today.
I got you.
We're working on coming off the pick and roll.
It's not that.
We're working on high ball screen. Yeah, it's super.
It's the smooth, super granular things that will happen.
Micro.
20 times in a season.
Yep. Super specific. And we'll work on that for 10 minutes, and we're going to work on this specific situation.
Okay.
And then at the end of it, we do reads off of it to where we don't tell them what they're doing. We've given them the tools for success.
You've done A, you've done B, you've done C. Now you're going to do I'm not going to tell you which one we're going to do.
Everything. Okay. I ain't telling you. You got to read and react based off the defense. And that's how we educate them and build their IQ. Because coachable players and players that can be a coach are more serviceable than guys that coaches have to tell 2 or 3 times. Mm. Coaches are CEOs. They don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Every day, though, and then Friday they play again. They lift an hour before we go to workouts.
Okay.
Said, listen, get some loose, and then we go into workouts. And every day they have to make 500 shots, 500 threes.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Have you done the research on them lifting before the workouts, before the basketball, and then after?
I don't believe in lifting after.
Why?
I believe in maintenance work after.
Okay.
Maintenance. And they do maintenance after. Because when they go to do their workout, we want them to be tired.
When they go to do their basketball workout.
We want them to be physically worn down because the season beats on you physically. 82 games it does. I believe in the strength approach to that. I do. But we found that guys also in the summer, they're going to do what they want to do.
Mm.
So they ain't going to be workout, then stay and lift. We've done our research based off of what we've seen in our gym. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does.
You know, so that.
When they get done lifting.
When
they get done playing ball. They're toast.
We kill them.
Yeah. I see. And so, honestly, the workout is like, I hate to say this because it's not this. They're fully loose. They're fully flexible. They're ready to go.
They're ready to go.
They walk out of the weight room.
They've had an hour lifting. Seg gives them a quick bar shake, and they hop on the court. And then when I say we roll. And, like, I love our guys. And I do love you, Infinity Club guys. We know we be killing y'all. We kill them. And we put them through a torture chamber.
How is there not a balance, though, between the, quote, torture chamber and making sure that they're physically able to be fresh in October when they go back?
Yeah, so that's a seasonal approach. So what we do is that's our June.
Okay.
July, it goes to more playing and doing what we worked on in June and strictly shooting, ball handling, maintenance work on the court.
Mm-hmm.
And then August, we're doing straight skills because if a guy gets hurt in August from playing, he's cooked in September, October before training camp. We don't want that. So August is strictly shooting, skills, work on game simulation, reads, but no live action.
Really? Y'all are not playing a lot of ball
in August? No, not a ton. We'll have like pickup weekends before a guy leaves. We'll do different things like that, but not a ton.
Wow. How many pro athletes do you have right now that you're working with? I mean, or this past
NBA season? Or just pro?
Just pro.
38.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's G League and NBA?
G League, NBA, overseas. We don't work with every overseas guys. We have a few of the guys that we really love and that have been our babies. But that's NBA, G League, overseas.
Why don't you work with more overseas guys?
A lot of overseas guys aren't. And you have to understand what overseas. Everybody has this misconception about playing professional basketball overseas. They're making like $2,500 a month.
Yeah.
Most of them.
Mm.
It's not really professional basketball like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Tell me about being a single dad.
Yeah.
And owning your own business.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's hard.
I mean, what do you want me to say?
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's a grind. And honestly, it's probably more a grind for Bub than it is me. I made a lot of mistakes with it. I'm going to tell everybody, I make mistakes all the time. I think everybody does. I think the weak-minded people ain't admitting it.
Sure.
It's hard. I mean, dude, but we've got such a good support system too, though.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
You know, obviously my dad.
Dad?
He's around all the time. He's the greatest grandfather ever.
Yeah.
He was like one of them dudes that was born to be a grandfather. But, and Bub's mom, I mean, she's fully supportive
Where
of
him. Where she live?
She lives in Hoover right now.
Oh, she's local.
Yeah. She's here.
Okay.
She's here.
Let's talk through this for a second. So you have parents that either didn't get married or divorced.
Yep.
And then you have parents that are together. But sometimes, how do you and your, what's her name?
Morgan.
How do you and Morgan co-parent?
We co-parent better than most in-house parents.
Really?
Really. There's no secrets. There's no BS. There's no tension between relationship because we're cool. We're friends. And we both have the same goal. Now, it hasn't always been that way.
Yeah.
But we both have the common goal of our only job is to create a great kid.
Yeah.
And so we're great with it. Now there's issues. There's issues with any relationship.
But me and Jackie have issues.
Yeah, you feel me? But no, our co-parenting relationship, a lot of like on Bub's teams, the parents, they'll be like, how are you guys so great together? It's like, because we don't live together.
Yeah.
We don't have to deal with each other every day. So we're great together.
Is she remarried?
Nope.
You're not remarried?
No.
She have a boyfriend?
I don't know.
Don't know.
That ain't
don't
my
care.
That ain't my business. My name's Bennett, and I ain't in it.
What about you? You have are in a relationship with anybody?
No.
Gotcha.
No.
Okay.
I'm hanging.
That's good. What's the hardest part, though, about it? Like the one thing?
Being fully present.
Sure.
Being fully present.
How do you... Okay, you're aware, because that was a quick answer. How do you get better at that, and how do you do a good job at being present?
I build my daily routines around that. Hmm. I need to be fully present as a dad. Bub, from 6:30 in the morning to 8 a.m., he goes to school. He deserves my undivided attention.
Yep.
I get off the court about 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. From the time I get off the court to the time he goes to sleep, he deserves my undivided attention.
Yeah.
There'll be pieces throughout the day where I get to love on him, get to hang with him, but I ain't locked in undivided dad. This is like one of those deals where parenting is and raising a kid is caught more than taught.
Yeah.
He got watch how I live on a lot of things. Yeah, he's around the watch how I live.
Yeah.
You know, but he sees it more through that and through the interactions. And then PJ's like his uncle.
Yeah.
Said, like an uncle.
Sure.
Sam, like an uncle. His family is the gym.
He gets out of school.
3.
He comes to the gym.
I pick him up at school at 2:45. He comes to the gym. I don't structure workouts until 3:30 minimum.
Gives you an hour to flex time.
give me like 30 minutes. We can go get a snack. He can be a normal kid. Then we get to the school. He goes to my office. I work out groups that aren't his age group. He goes to my office. He does his homework. When he's done with his homework, he's allowed to leave the office, and he comes outside and he'll like shoot around. He'll hang out. He'll mess with people that are in the gym.
Yeah.
His friends come to the gym, so he's around other kids every day.
Sure.
And now it's a grind, but I'm telling you right now, Charlie Newton's going to be successful because Charlie Newton has seen all phases of this, and he sees how hard we work.
How much time does he devote to actual structured training after, in the afternoons? I mean, until he goes home at night.
Structured?
Hopping in a class, hopping in a workout.
He'll do like an hour and a half a day.
Yeah.
Of it, so he likes to coach. He coaches our mini hoopers, which is one of our buckets of the business where it's little kids. But he does his own structured stuff about an hour and a half. I make other people work with them.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. What are some of the routines and habits that you feel like have made you successful?
I take my time. I think different people have different forms of meditating. I love to read. One of my close friends here gave me a book called Slight Edge. Loved it.
Yeah.
It's the greatest gift anybody can give me is a book. But I'm very protective of my alone time so that I can be sharp mentally, take my time to drink coffee, read.
When is that?
That is at about 6:15, or depending on the day, it's going to be after I drop Bub off, I'll take like 45 solid minutes.
Yeah.
I don't touch my phone. I don't talk to people. I don't do anything.
Yeah.
I drink coffee and read. I have to box every day. If I don't box, I'm not a good me.
Okay.
Minimum 6 rounds. Most of the time, we're in the 8 to 12 range.
With a purse or on the bag?
On the bag.
Gotcha.
I've done so much with people, and I...
Yeah, that's true.
It's like...
That's true.
At a certain point, you are who you are.
Yeah.
I know why I'm doing it.
I work out every morning by myself.
Yeah, you know what you're doing. You did CrossFit with Rich Froning and those guys for so long that like now you put yourself through what you know what you need to do, and I bet you... There's nobody that's going to push Thomas Cox harder than Thomas Cox is.
Here's the key about knowing yourself is you know the days when you can go hard and know the days when you can't.
Mm-hmm.
And like, for example, I didn't feel bad last week, but I just wasn't me.
Yep.
And so I took 2 days and I hiked.
Yeah.
I got a good sweat, but my heart rate didn't get to super high. I didn't stress my muscles, whatever. I hiked for an hour.
But you still worked out because of behavior activation.
It did. But I got to move every day.
Same way.
I got to move every day.
Same way.
Okay. So, sounds like your morning's pretty structured. When do you start work?
Like, with the office or on the court? Ooh. Because there's two different things.
Okay. Tell me about what your office life is like.
I mean, I start as soon as I get done reading. I'm on the computer. It's all about mapping out 2 seasons ahead, sticking a season or two ahead. Launching programs because there's like a whole breakdown and system that we've built, and we kind of built a playbook for how the business needs to run as far as, okay, we have this event. Setting the event is the first part. We have this event. We're going to do this there. Well, now we have to follow all these pieces, and they have to happen 3 weeks out. You need to get your shirts in so that you can know if you need more shirts. 2 weeks out, you need to have your trophies in and whatever. You need to have your full game plan and your team together 2 weeks out.
Yeah.
You need to be starting to communicate with people 2 weeks out to a week and a half out. And we just have a system structured. So my job is to go in and build that out so our people can execute.
Does it help to do that by yourself, or do you like having people with you to do that?
I like having people when we talk about the event, what we're going to do. Like, hey, let's do cool stuff. What do you guys want to do? We're going to have a tournament. Okay.
Here, a whiteboard.
Yep.
An idea thing.
Yeah, we have the we call the think tank. We have our think tank meeting. High level.
Yep.
I like to go in like, okay, boom, boom, boom. Hit Sander and say, Sander, what do we need to charge people for this? This is what we're going to do. And Sander goes down, he breaks all the calls. He's like, here's what you need to charge people. It's like, all right, cool, thanks. I'll get to work. And then we go down to work with that, bring it to the team. And the good thing is our team's honest. Yeah. They're like, Newt, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Sure.
Or they're like, bro,
that's great.
That's elite. Yeah. Let's go. And then they end up taking ownership of it and turn into something more. But I like to do a lot of the like setup on my own.
Yeah. There's parts of me that love sitting with Sierra and the team and all that and doing stuff. But there's parts of me that I just got to be alone.
Yeah.
Okay. What are some of these specific habits that you see these successful athletes have?
They all have daily routines. Really? And I share my Google Calendar with them, and it has to be written out because if it's written out, you'll do it.
Yeah.
But I tell them, you got to have daily routines. If you don't have daily routines, you're setting yourself up for failure. And the successful people that I know embrace failing. Mm-hmm. The true ones who don't succeed are the ones who don't try anything. They ain't scared to put themselves out there and try.
Yeah.
You know, but I definitely daily habits, daily routines. They have their strict schedule. They do something outside of themselves. Malcolm Hill is one of my favorite guys ever in the history of the world, because Malcolm Hill is all about being prolific and putting into and pouring into people and giving back and making other people leave him feeling great. I found that the most successful ones are the CEO of themselves.
Mm, okay.
They look at themselves and they're like, all right, I'm a professional. This is a business. Whatever image I'm giving out, I'm the CEO of that image.
And I got to be great at that.
I've got to be great at that.
The non-basketball, these are all non-basketball things, non-sports things.
Business is business.
Sure. Tell me about, like, are there anything that you see these basketball guys do from a basketball standpoint that they all, I mean, these guys do this every day? You mentioned the 500 shots. So, like, tell me, what are some specific habits that you see some of these athletes do on the court that all the great ones have through these things?
Talk crap. I'm gonna be honest with you. They believe in themselves.
Really?
So much. Then they're so competitive that everything that they do is a competition.
Wow.
We're shooting. Oh, you got 8 makes. Watch this.
9.
Boom.
Yeah.
And they let each other know. It's fun competitiveness, but, like, they get after it.
Yeah.
They do. And they compete. Every single thing that they do, they compete. If I'm in here lifting this, the next guy is going to come in and try to do more.
Reminds me of The Last Dance, people talking about Jordan.
The great ones. And the thing is, like, Jordan did it at a psychotic level.
Sure. But it's the best of all time.
You know, and the truth is, a lot of these guys were looked at as villains, and people don't love them. But you're either a superhero in one person's story or a villain in that person's story. You don't really get to pick. And there's not much differences in the similarities between the two.
Not many at all.
Because you have to fully believe in yourself and what you're doing.
Oh, sure.
Because if you don't, you'll get eaten alive. And those guys are super competitive.
Tell me about this. What is the most surprising thing that you've learned from coaching college kids and pro kids and then coaching little kids? The surprising similarities.
It's simple.
Yeah.
Don't make it complicated. Make it simple. The most surprising thing is that it is very simple. And you can teach college. I teach our professional stuff, something that, like, I saw a first grader on mini hoops doing. And it's like, oh, we got to go back and reteach that to the older guys. Mm. Because it's just a basic fundamental thing that they're lacking. And then the buildup is crazy.
What's the biggest misconception about basketball training that you run into?
Everybody thinks it's one-on-one skill. We play a basketball game. Roughly, there's 78 to 90 possessions in said game.
Okay.
Correct? Half of that time you're on offense, half the time you're on defense. Okay. So let's just say 80 broken down in half. That's 40. 40. The best players in the world shoot like 10 shots a game.
Okay.
We're talking about the best. Now, you'll have your exceptions, but you ain't seeing guys on winning teams shooting 25 shots.
Okay.
That ain't how it happens, unless you're Mike or Kobe.
Yeah.
Right? The best players shoot 10 shots a game. So that means for 10 possessions of the game, you're shooting the ball. What are you doing the other 70 possessions?
Mm.
The misconception is that you got to be a great one-on-one. No, basketball's not a one-on-one game. It's not. You need to be great at a bunch of things.
Wow.
And guys get paid more for being great role players than great all-around players. That's rebound the ball, shoot the three. Get paid millions of dollars if you can do those at a high clip.
Yeah.
Defend. How about this? Teaching team defense.
Teaching, yeah.
Everybody thinks defend is I'm guarding you. You're not getting by. No.
How do you help? How do you play help defense?
How do you help the helper?
Yeah.
People understand being in help, but they don't understand, okay, so with every action, there's a reaction.
So if I pull off this guy, I got to be able to see that, and I got to kind of play
Let's just say I drive baseline. My five-man has to step up. Well, who's going to cover down and crack back my five-man?
Yeah.
Well, the opposite wing. Well, then what if they throw a skip pass out to the opposite wings, man? Mm. We have what we call X out. Excuse me, Mike. We have what we call X out, to where the top guy flies to the corner.
Right.
And then the guy who is cracking back, he has to fly back, and they just switch men for the play.
Yeah.
But a lot of kids don't understand that. When you understand that, the game becomes so much easier.
But the number of reps that you have to do that is astronomical, isn't it?
Astronomically high.
Yeah.
And you have to do it consistently.
And here's the thing. You can't get bored.
No.
With doing the same thing over and over again.
And truthfully, if you want to know what we do great,
yeah.
Like if anybody, we make boring stuff fun.
Yeah.
We trick kids into getting better because they don't realize it because they're having so much fun.
We trick kids into getting better.
It's just the truth.
Put it on a poster.
That's what it is you don't know that you're working as hard as you can. You don't realize how hard you're going. You don't understand the values and the principles that you have with each freaking possession that are some things that college coaches can't get their kids to do, but you're in the fourth grade running crackback, X-ing out, and getting to it.
I'm writing down.
You need to save it. But it's the truth because they don't realize it.
Yeah.
And 90% of the time, their parents don't understand it.
Sure. They think it's the same thing over and over
they
again.
They do. Yeah. But then you'll have like a – we've had college coaches come to our OTM games before, and they're like, did they just ice a ball screen on the side and then turn it into where you trap them and pull over help and give up the opposite corner in the fourth grade?
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, that's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
They're like, how?
I can't get my college kids to do it. Yeah.
No, it's like, we do it in 3 1-hour practices a week. So.
Yeah. So every sport has a trend.
Yep.
They're always this is the next thing. You know, back in the 70s and 80s, it was the wishbone offense in football. And then it got to be the run and shoot. And then it got to be the spread. Every sport has trends.
Yeah.
What is an emerging trend in basketball training or in basketball in general that you think is going to be the next 10 years?
Yeah. I really think the game speed's going to be up more. And there's going to be a lot more quick shots and threes taken. We've already seen it kind of with Steph Curry, so like it's headed that way, but different programs. Buckyball has been huge. Coach Oates has been huge with it. So it's going to be a lot more like, hey, quick steal, we want a quick bucket, let's get it up. Unless, you know, when I was in college, it was all, hey, pick and roll heavy, pick and roll heavy. I think everything's going to be geared more to that. I think you're going to see a lot more skill over athleticism being valued as fives are starting to stretch the floor.
Go back, say that again. You think there's going to be a lot more skill?
Skill over athleticism. So just being a good athlete isn't going to be enough because you got to be able to stretch the defenses out.
That's good.
If I can't shoot a three, you don't have to come guard me at the three-point line, so my big can help at the rim when everybody's going to be looking to drive and kick. I really think it's going to be fast-paced, fast-tempo style that the fans are going to want to see.
How much has – so I feel like – and I'm not a – where football is here for me, basketball's probably here just because of knowledge.
Yeah, yeah.
How much has the data stuff that Nate Oates has somewhat – I want to say revolutionized, but, like, it's the first time I've heard the data part of, like, basketball. How much is that going to be a new thing in basketball? Let me go back to – so Nate Oates talks about how, you know – you will make this number of percentages, three-pointer. You explain it.
It's about being smart with the shots that you're taking. They have points per possession, right? Okay, let's say I'm taking the Michael Jordan, the greatest player of all time shot, the mid-range fadeaway.
Yep.
Nate Oates ain't letting that happen. Mm-mm. And he's also not letting you finish off a one, and he might not have that rule, a one-footed floater, because the percentages say that finishing off of 2 feet in the paint around 5 feet away from the rim are greater, and we're going to get more points per possession than if you go finish off on one. Same thing with the mid-range shot. We have the same percentage chance of making the three, yet we get one more point per possession off of that. So it's really a numbers game, and it's brilliant, right? It's brilliant. They either want layups or threes.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Smart. It's the analytics are a different side to that. So, like, what you're saying, yes, but that's been in play for a while, that side of it. You know, it's just about what coaches – allow different things. And now there are exceptions to every rule.
Sure.
If Nate Oates coached Michael Jordan, Nate Oates would be out here running the triangle because the best coaches don't say, this is my system and we're just going to do this. The best coaches say, okay, better players win games.
Yeah.
Right? But the analytics is taking a turn and it's – I'm not saying it's a fad because I believe in analytics. But different shooting mechanisms, different machines that we're seeing where it's like, okay, you shoot and then you look up at it. Those things – they're going to more revolutionize the game because truth is parents can buy into that because you can see numbers.
Yeah.
Numbers are black and white.
Yeah.
Numbers are linear, right? I can see those numbers. Now, the success rate isn't linear, but the numbers, I can see that. That makes sense.
So people need the data in order to buy in.
Correct. It's the faith, you know.
Sure. You got to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I respect, but Nate Oates is separate. I actually believe in Oates and Bucky, their way of doing it, the way that all these guys do it, because we used it in scouting reports. You see, all right, this guy's going to drive left 26% of the time. Every time he drives left, he pulls up. If he drives right, he's getting to the rim. Huge on analytics and statistics with as it refers to that. As far as telling a guy what not to do, I think that if I have to tell you what you can't do, right, I don't like doing that because guys are looking over the shoulder, one, when you do that, but also we clearly have not made it known who we are and how we operate if I have to get on you and take you out for a shot.
Correct.
This can be handled on the front
end. Who are we, not who are we not?
Which is why the best of the best don't talk about who they're not. The best of the best just say on who they are.
This is who
That's why you hear Nate Oates. That's why you hear Bucky. You don't hear the guys that still do the analytics, but they're busy checking guys and telling them who they're not because their guys aren't confident and can't succeed within that system.
Correct. Makes a lot of sense.
You know?
What is the hardest part about your business?
The hard part about my business is any business. It's your people. And it's building the culture and the community that you want on a daily basis while still maintaining profitable.
Yeah.
That is the hardest part. We've learned I'm not the good guy to be the one to ask for the money because I can't be building a community with what we do and be like, hey, but give me your money. Right? We had to have systems in place to ensure that people want to do that. And people will do it, but building the community, getting people bought into your culture, and getting people to believe on the front end is the hardest thing. Yeah. And then over time, we've gotten better at it, and the work shows.
Does it get easier?
It does, but then it gets vastly different. Like, if you're really about that action, you're about that life, you don't want easy. As it gets easier, you want to find new challenges and new things to explore. And we went from where we were just doing camps and player development to where we started doing leagues and tournaments to where we started doing things with our pros that are a little different, where we're starting to do some analytical stuff, where we built a weight room and we're adding a strength and development. We're about to build batting cages. You know, we're about to tap into some stuff that's uncharted territory because it's grow or die.
Right.
That's the name of the game.
Yeah.
Right? It gets easier until it doesn't.
Tell me about the different buckets of things that you do at Alabama Hoops. Like, give me the high-level view of what all you guys do.
So, high-level... Yeah. Camps, leagues, tournaments, player development.
Camps, leagues, tournaments, player development.
Those four things. That's what we do. We're a two-court facility. We have the ability to run leagues and tournaments very well, and we do it. And we do it at a high rate because they're extremely organized. They run on time. We have great people involved. We do great graphics, cool things to highlight kids. Like into the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, a little bit.
We change lives.
Yeah,
we start with mini hoops, and we bring them in from the first day that they can ever play basketball, think about basketball. We teach them the rules of the game. Mm. We play Coach Says and teaches them the spots on the court. And our thing is we say, we're going to teach you how to be coached. And then once we've taught them how to be coached, then we start working on basketball player development with our second and third grade group. Then we have a fourth and fifth grade group. Then we have a sixth or eighth grade group. And then we have our high school groups. And within each of those age groups, we have elite academies. Because the truth is, hoops is for all, right? It is. However, how do you have every kid, the kids who are doing this just for physical exercise that love basketball, how do you keep them, right, engaged. And in line, engaged? And then how do you keep this bucket over here that's quote-unquote elite athletes that want to get better and want to pursue this? And
it's
how
like,
do you,
it's like AP courses and general population courses at high schools.
Correct. Absolutely correct.
And everybody can learn math.
Yep.
But the AP kids are going to learn at a higher rate, more a faster rate, going to do more work, and going to be more competitive.
Well, and it's the reason why you split them into groups. And even when we do our PD, we split them up. So we'll have fourth and fifth grade training, right? And that's everybody, Elite Academy kids included.
Okay.
And what we do is, within those groups, we have four baskets, and we keep minimum four coaches ready to coach that whole session, that whole hour. And what we do is we say, all right, this is a group because we know all of our kids. We're familiar with them. They're in our community. We do a drill for warm-ups. If there's a kid or two that are new, we watch how they handle that drill and warm-ups. And we're like, all right, he needs to be in this group. We split them into different groups, and each drill that we do is appropriate for their skill set. Mm. So we have beginners, advanced, intermediate, and then the highest level for each group, which we call the Elite Academy group. we have those groups paired together within each age group. So they're all pushing each other. And it's not just for them to push each other. It's for the kids that are beginners to not feel intimidated,
yeah.
feel comfortable, feel confident, and want to do this.
Want to come back.
Yeah.
You got the gamification part of this thing is the business part is you got to get Johnny on day one to want to come back, even though he's on the same court as a kid that's been in your program for 5 years, 3 days a week.
And that's all the code. I'm telling you, we have seven core principles that we believe in, and that is every one of those things dials into that.
Getting the kid to come back is a brilliant big business strategy. Getting the kid to come back is a culture strategy
yep.
too.
Yep.
And having both of those and being, let's just be honest, being cognizant and aware that I got to have repeat customers
yep.
to A, make money.
Yes.
B, change their life. Because you ain't going to change your life.
No, we're not changing your life that quick. And change your life sounds drastic, but the truth
is no.
It's the truth.
It's the truth. So here's my next question. Why does what you do matter?
What we do, because we're changing lives. Sports and life are the parallels are unbelievable.
What do you say to people that think you're full of crap?
I
the
don't.
The people that don't think that sports matter. Like there's a president at a local university that doesn't think that sports matter.
That's one of the dumber things I've ever heard.
But he does. He does it. What do you say to that?
It just doesn't even make any sense. Yeah. It's like the old adage a wise man once said, don't argue with fools.
Yeah.
Because people from a distance can't tell who's who. That's not something I belong in a conversation with.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to convince him. If he's a president, especially, I ain't convincing him. But what I would tell somebody who's asking my genuine opinion,
yeah.
they do. You have to learn how to handle success and failure. Okay? Yeah. In life. If you don't handle success well, these rich people, they have everything, and then they end up burning your money, cheating on your wife, not being a good father. You didn't handle success well. Well, what about people that have never failed before? The first time they get failure, they're the ones that spin off and sure. go into the deep end. And like we're all feeling bad for them. But the truth is, that could have been handled in their upbringing.
Yeah.
And sports, especially youth sports, as kids are getting older, the coach is as important as the parents. And that sounds crazy, but it's true. Coaches are just important parents because you got to get on Tegan for... You said deodorant.
Yeah, brushing gotta wear deodorant, T.
Brushing his teeth.
Yes.
Presenting himself correctly. How he communicates with girls yep. at his school because he's starting to like girls.
Yep.
How he communicates with his friend on his phone. Eating the right things. Right. Doing the little things. You don't want to have to get on him about other things. But coaches can help instill the same values that you have and that yeah. you believe in. Mm. They can do that through sport. And what do kids more eager to do? Brush their teeth, put on deodorant, or go to basketball?
Go to basketball. There
so no we doubt. Can teach them things and, again, trick them into being good people through the cultural values that they learn.
What is the number one source of revenue for hoops?
Player development.
Player development.
Player development in camps. Player development is our most consistent source because it's essentially the country club model, the subscription model.
Yeah.
It's our most consistent source, and when you're a subscriber, you get benefits like yeah. discounts on camps and stuff. Camps are great for us.
Camps are big pops.
Big pops, but they're also great for the community because yeah. the parents need some place to send their kids.
Oh, yeah.
And where would they rather send them during the summer?
Do you have – are you do stuff on, like, fall break days? And
every day there's no school, we do a pop-up camp.
Perfect.
$75, send your kid to us for 4 hours.
Love
Come
it.
On, let's hang out.
That's it. Last question. If you had to start over today from scratch, what would you do differently?
Not a damn thing.
Really?
Really. I love who I am. I love where I'm at, and I love yeah. where we're headed.
That's good.
I'm so proud of it.
Yeah. And you should be.
Yeah. And it's not just hoops. I made a lot of mistakes along the way.
Sure.
But I've also learned a lot, and we've grown a lot.
Yeah.
And I got the right people in my corner.
Yeah.
My son's happy.
Yeah.
I'm happy.
Yeah.
I'm lucky.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't change a damn thing.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Newt, this has been wonderful. Breath of fresh air.
Appreciate
love
you.
Love the authenticity, love the honesty, love the just the banter. This is easy. We could probably go for 2 more hours. So
probably like 2 more weeks. Exactly. But we're gonna do that off of camera.
So, hey, thank you again.
I appreciate you, brother.
Right, yes, sir.